Monday night will be 27. Tuesday will be another 41-degree day. And then Wednesday, a chance of rain or snow with a high near 38.
And it's time for Radioactive. Thank you for staying tuned for Radioactive.
Welcome to a climate emergency call-in, a special edition of Radioactive, an environmental and social justice news journal for January 30th, 2020. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Since October, South Portland, Portland, Bar Harbor, and Brunswick have all declared a climate emergency. Today, we speak with local youth who were instrumental in these efforts and continue to escalate a movement for climate action. We also will discuss yesterday's meeting of the state's newly formed Maine Climate Council and the Youth Voices Day, held concurrently by Maine Youth for Climate Justice. In November, 11,000 scientists declared a climate emergency in the midst of an escalating social movement to address the causes and impacts of climate change. Admittedly, there has been concerted action, education, and agitating for decades as the climate crisis has crystallized. But the youth movement now is a force in these times, showing incredible leadership, intelligence, and an uncompromising challenge to everyone to effect actual change. The formal declarations of a climate emergency by local governments is a new and impactful achievement, but the youth movement has not stopped with the adoption of resolutions. They are part of the problem solving and what will have to be major shifts in our society at the macro and local levels. We have with us in the studio today a number of youth guests active in the local, national, and international climate movement. We have Sarohi Kumar, an MDI high school student, a sophomore, member of the MDI High School Eco Team, and Maine Youth for Climate Justice, which organized yesterday's Youth Voices Day at the Maine Climate Council meeting in Augusta. She's also a founding member of Climate Emergency Action Coalition in Bar Harbor. Welcome, Sarohi.
Hi, nice to be here.
And we also have Adam Neuslein and Thomas, I'm sorry, I'm going to have you say your last name.
Korstein, yeah.
Thank you. They are both seniors at MDI High School and are also both members of the MDI High School Eco Team, Maine Youth for Climate Justice, and founding members of Climate Emergency Action Coalition. All three have been part of the Bar Harbor climate emergency effort and were three of the students who presented before the Bar Harbor Town Council prior to its adoption of the climate emergency declaration in November. For the first part of the program, we also have with us by phone Anna Siegel. She's with Maine Strikes and is a student at Friends School of Portland. She's in the eighth grade and is also part of the Maine Youth for Climate Justice and was at yesterday's Youth Voices Day at the Maine Climate Council meeting in Augusta. Anna, do we have you on the phone?
Hello.
Hi, welcome. Later, we're going to be joined by Anya Wright, a student at the College of the Atlantic and the youth rep on the Maine Climate Council, and we'll talk more with her a little bit later in the program. Also in the studio with us today, that we have Laura Berry, a recent College of the Atlantic graduate, now the program manager for the College of the Atlantic's Community Energy Center. She is also the director for research and publications for the national organization, the Climate Mobilization Project. And she also is a founding member of Bar Harbor's Climate Emergency Action Coalition. Welcome to the program, Laura.
Thanks for having us, Meredith.
Well, we're really glad to have you all here. And as we said, the climate emergency has been declared in South Portland, October 8th, 2019, Portland in November 18th, 2019, Bar Harbor on November 19th, 2019, and Brunswick on December 2nd, 2019. On January 21st, the Bar Harbor Town Council additionally passed a measure to create a climate emergency task force with a mission of drawing down the town's carbon emissions by 2030. This passage was preceded by a number of stakeholder meetings convened quickly after the emergency declaration was passed. We want to start by talking about these local resolutions, and then we can get more in depth in a bit on the work of Bar Harbor's Climate Emergency Task Force and the wider movement. But if we can start with all of you giving some input about what drove the youth to bring climate emergency to the Bar Harbor Town Council. And I don't know who would like to go first, but I'd like to hear from all of you. Tom?
Well, one of the biggest things is that this is our future that that we're fighting for, and we're going to be the we're going to see the impacts of this the most, and our future generations. And so it's something that's super important to us. And also, there wasn't action from anyone else, so we felt that we needed to do something. We took the first step.
Yeah, we see that there's a problem, and the most important thing is that we don't see any leadership from people older than us who are responsible for making these changes. And while we are willing to bring everyone to the table and be the leading force behind pushing people to make action, we don't want to be the ones who have to make the action because we don't have the experience, but we're very happy and we're very willing to, you know, provide the push necessary.
Yeah. Adam?
Yeah, I just felt and I think a lot of us others also, we needed to do something, and I think this is exactly what needed to happen, and it was time, and I think we had people who were interested and people who felt like something needed to get done, and so we did something.
And real quick, before we move to Portland, what did you do? You saw that something needed to be done, but obviously you organized, you coalesced. I know you presented the demands that you wanted to bring to the council at the climate strike that occurred. It was at September. Was that where organizing around climate strike kind of coalesced this action to move towards to approaching Bar Harbor? Laura Berry?
Yeah. So in September in Bar Harbor, as well as around the world of last year, there were millions of people led by youth striking in the streets. And so the main climate strikes and in Bar Harbor specifically, it brought together students from College of the Atlantic, from the high school, from the elementary school together. And we presented a series of 10 demands to the community, to the island, to the council itself. And the first of those demands co-developed by these students, these youth, was to ask our representatives, ask our governments who have been elected to represent us and to prepare, us, our world and create a town, a sustainable town, to declare a climate emergency, which, you know, means recognizing that we're facing this existential threat, as the students were mentioning, that no one seems to be doing very much about. We've talked about climate change for decades, for longer than any of us have been alive, and yet we are still in this emergency situation. And that conversation coalesced into this group of students, the Climate Emergency Action Coalition, students and adult allies as well across the island, who brought the resolution to declare climate emergency in Bar Harbor to the town council later that year, which passed 6-1, and then later followed up by an actual task force, so creating a real institution of the town to actually dedicate towards decarbonization, which is something that the town of Bar Harbor and on MDI has never had anything like this before, despite the fact that we are incredibly vulnerable to climate risks and to climate impacts. So it's been a process. It's been a very collaborative process between students, and we call them adult allies. I'm 25, so I still consider myself a youth. But it's been wonderful, I think, you know, working with students who are really the driving force behind this initiative.
Great. And I want to bring in Anna Siegel in. We understand that you, can we say where you are right now?
Anna? Yeah, I am, you mean where I'm heading or going to be?
What's that?
You mean where I'm heading?
Oh, okay. Well, if you don't want to talk about where you're heading, I'm not sure if that's something that you're keeping under wraps right now, but you are involved with some climate action right now.
It's fine. I'm heading to sit in at Susan Collins' office, which is why I'll have to hop off in a few minutes. But I'd love to talk about what is happening in Portland.
Yes, you were working on the Portland and South Portland initiatives, or just the Portland. Yeah, talk with us about those efforts to declare a climate emergency in those cities and the work you've been doing in Southern Maine.
Yeah, so it's both similar and different than the Bar Harbor and MDI group, because so Maine Strikes, the group I'm with, we also organized a climate strike and rally on September 20th in Portland. and we had over 2,000 youth and adults in attendance. And at that rally, we asked the mayors and city councilors of both Portland and South Portland to pass a climate emergency resolution. And then less than 2 months later, after testifying in front of the Sustainability Committee and the councils themselves, it passed and it happened. Yeah, and the effort with Portland, South Portland, was made possible by the support of Adult Allies and 360 Maine. But with that under our belt, the Maine Strikes team continued with other local declarations. We worked with the Sunrise Bowdoin Hub in Brunswick for Brunswick to pass climate emergency, and we are currently working on climate emergency in Saco, York, Newcastle, and soon Belfast.
And what was your experience with the receptivity of council members and how quick they were to warm to the idea of declaring a climate emergency?
We were slightly nervous because the mayor that we presented the resolution to on September 20th, former Mayor Strimling, that was right around election time. So by the time that we asked, around the time that we were asking the resolution to be passed, a new mayor was coming in, which we were kind of shaky about because Mayor Strimling at the time had seemed supportive, but we weren't sure if the new mayor would. So that was a little nerve-wracking. But the resolution passed through each committee, first Sustainability Committee in Portland, and then the councils of South Portland and Portland unanimously. So it ended up going well.
And do you know, is there going to be some sort of task force created there, as in Bar Harbor?
So the difference between Bar Harbor and Portland and South Portland is that Portland and South Portland have a program called One Climate Future, which is a joint city, essentially a task force of sorts. And that provision was not in our resolution. It was instead we were asking them to adapt the goals and timeline of One Climate Future.
Laura, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, and I think, Anna, what you're saying about adapting the goals that we have is really kind of key to the climate emergency movement because, you know, a lot of people recognize that climate change is an issue, but they aren't treating it as the actual emergency that we know that it is, and it's not being treated with the urgency. We have, you know, timelines where we say, oh, we'll get to zero carbon or net zero carbon emissions by 2050, but one of the things that is really driving this movement is the sense of urgency that no, we don't have that time. We don't actually have, decades to act to completely change our energy systems and our ways of life. But we actually have, you know, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, only a decade to completely transform our economy, to get off of fossil fuels and to rapidly, decarbonize our entire ways of life. And so, the difference, I think, that Anna was pointing out between Portland, for example, that had an existing climate plan, there are some places like that where what the goal is to accelerate that action and to align it with what the science actually says we need to do. And whereas in Bar Harbor, where there wasn't that sort of institutional structure, we're starting from scratch, trying to build it up, trying to ramp up action very, very quickly. So, they're both, I think, really great examples of the sort of the power of the climate emergency declaration, both as a psychological sort of framework for us to be expressing the urgency, but also as an organizing tool to be used by climate activists.
Great. Anything anyone else wants to? Okay. And how many more minutes do we have? Do you have to leave right now, or can I ask you one more thing?
One more thing would be great.
Okay, great. So we know you were present. We're going to be talking a little more detail about the Maine Climate Council meeting in Augusta yesterday. But you, along with others sitting at the table here today, spoke at Youth Voices Day, and you had some messages that you wanted to present to the Maine Climate Council and just in general on the need for climate emergency to be taken seriously. Do you want to give your perspective a little bit on the message that you were trying to portray yesterday and any reflections on the work of the Maine Climate Council as they're starting their work?
Yeah, so the Maine Strikes team, along with these local emergency declarations, we're also exploring ways to declare state climate emergency. And so I've been holding weekly calls with youth and adult allies to strategize possible ways forward on that front. So at the press conference, I presented that demand of the state declaring climate emergency, even though we're still strategizing on how that would be done and how we would do that. And that's still a continuing and ever-evolving process. But some really good things are coming out of that discussion. And I'm really excited for what the possibilities are for the state to declare a climate emergency.
Great. Well, thanks, Anya Siegel. We really appreciate you coming on the phone before you go. And can you say one more time what the demand is to Susan Collins today?
Oh, it's not my action necessarily. I'm a participant, not an organizer. So I'm going to go see.
Okay, great. Well, we'll hopefully be talking with you in the future. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
Again, if you are just joining us, we are having a climate emergency call-in, a special Radioactive, and we have a number of students from Mount Desert Island High School and a recent graduate of College of the Atlantic, all youth who are founders of the Climate Emergency Action Coalition, which has been building a movement in Bar Harbor that has just recently produced the Bar Harbor Town Council passing a climate emergency declaration and started off stakeholder talks to form a recently passed task force that will look at how to affect change to actually address climate emergency. We're going to talk in a little more detail about that in a minute, but we are going to try to get on the phone with us right now on your right, who is also, she's a College of the Atlantic student. Great, we have her on the phone now. She is the appointed youth rep on the Maine Climate Council. She also has been active with our studio guests and is a founding member of the Climate Emergency Action Coalition. She also was on a College of the Atlantic delegation to the UN climate talks in Madrid last month, and she spoke before the Maine Climate Council yesterday and will be broadcasting her speech on an upcoming Radioactive. She was meant to be here with us today, but is feeling under the weather, so we're really glad to have you on the phone for a little bit. On your right, are you there?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry I can't be there in person.
Great. Well, thanks for being with us. I think you know everybody here, so we can have a conversation about the Maine Climate Council. What, from your perspective, their work means to the state of Maine, and how, as a youth rep active in a youth movement with a number of people across the state, how you're hoping to support that work and push it even further.
Sure, yeah. So I think the Climate Council is a really, really incredible opportunity to bring so many voices from across the state together, and so many scientists and youth and legislators and people from sort of all walks of life coming together to talk about these issues. And of course, as the youth were saying, there's always more room for diversity and equity and inclusion. And that was something that we talked about a lot yesterday and something that I talked about in my speech as well. And also definitely room for youth to push the council further to enhance their goals and to push for as bold action as possible. But yeah, the meeting yesterday was great. There was a lot of really good enthusiasm, and so I hope that enthusiasm continues into the following meeting and the following years. So,
what is the goal of the Maine Climate Council?
So at the moment, it is to reduce emissions by 80% by 2035, which is a great goal, and it's great, considering all the other goals of the U.S., but something that the youth are really pushing for is to move that goal to zero emissions by 2030, and that is a goal.
We're having trouble hearing you right now, Anya. Is there something on your end, or is it our line?
Oh, I'm not sure. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Finish your thought, and we'll see.
Sure. So the youth are pushing for zero emissions by 2030.
Well, Anya, thanks for joining us today. I guess we'll let you go and hope you feel better. And we will, as we say, broadcast your speech you gave yesterday and link to programs that we had with you a couple months ago as well, and hope to have you on. Feel better.
Great. Thanks so much. Bye, everyone.
Right. Hopefully our next calls will be a little bit easier to hear. We wanted to invite callers, invite the listening public to call in. Today is a call-in program, but today we actually only have, as we understand it, one functioning phone line. Hopefully we have one. So if you call in and you can't get through, keep calling. You also have the option of speaking to our engineer, John, who can take your comment or question and relay it to us on the air. So 469-0500, if you have thoughts, questions, want to inform others of actions you're taking in your community, have questions as we continue our conversation with our in-studio guests on how they're doing the work on MDI. Again, 469-0500. I just want to reintroduce our guests before we finish our conversation. Sarohi Kumar, Adam Nusline, Thomas Kristanji, and Laura Berry are all in the studio with us right now. The first three are MDI High School students. Laura Berry, a recent COA graduate. We want to talk a little bit more just to continue with the main Climate Council conversation, since we do have a caller. Okay, bye. Oh, okay, caller, go right ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to mention that I know this is a big question, but CO2 really hasn't been proven to cause warming, and it's actually plant food for trees and plants. And, you know, if there's too little CO2, then I think under about 280 parts per million, all plants and trees.
Okay, we're trying to talk about the actions today, but thank you for that perspective. I'll see if any of our guests want to talk about CO2, or we wanted to go ahead.
My perspective is that the conversation about whether climate change is happening or not is not the conversation that we need to be having anymore. You know, we have had decades of research that demonstrates that increased atmospheric emissions from burning fossil fuels, from CO2, it causes the planet to warm and it causes climate disruption. So this isn't this. To be perfectly honest, from the youth's perspective, you know, this is not something that we really engage in actually at all in our climate organizing anymore. And so, while it's still something that you know, of course, needs to be clearly more education about. It's something that I think, you know, we're focused on making action happen. And so I think that, you know, there are plenty of studies that demonstrate that it's demonstrably false.
Sarohi?
Yeah, there is a lot of talk about the need for public education around climate change. It's kind of shocking how little people know about, you know, the science that's been around for, like Laura said, longer than we've been alive. But considering our 10-year deadline that we have for when we need to stop carbon emissions or else we reach a point of irreversible damage, there just isn't time for, you know, dedicating all of our resources towards public education. So a lot of the stuff that our task force is going to be doing is educating the public, but we also need to focus on like a two-pronged approach of action and education. So
thank you. We have another caller. Thank you. Go right ahead.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
It's the analog anarchist from Dover Foxcroft. I am not a climate denier. I have a windmill on my roof, and I have nothing but solar panels, and I've never been on the grid 35 years. There was an article in Forbes magazine for investors going on about this movement to go through state, county, and local governments to make all new buildings electrically heated. And then they were going on about how these heat pumps are much more efficient than electric heat. And I'm going, wait a minute, I know too much about electricity. All your electricity goes into heat. It's 100% efficient, unless you want to talk about the line loss, and you're going to have line loss in anything that goes on the grid. So that's neither here nor there.
Okay, let me see if our guests are able to address some of this perspective, but we definitely are focusing a lot more on how to effectuate action at the local level, but I'm looking towards our researcher in the audience. Laura, would you like to thank you for
sure.
calling?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. And I can, so my other position working at College of the Atlantic through our Community Energy Center focuses quite a lot on building electrification and energy efficiency, which is a huge issue in Maine and is of course part of the climate fight. And I do think that, you know, in the terms of the future being electric and the future being much more efficient, that is what we're looking at. Heat pumps, I'm not going to spend the time during a climate program talking about the magic of heat pumps, but they are, you know, incredibly efficient and more so than the sort of typical resistant electric heating systems that we've had before. But, it just kind of goes to show that we do actually have the technology in terms of making our homes more efficient, making our businesses more efficient, and electrification is absolutely the way forward. So it's really exciting to see what's being done in Maine on renewable electricity and renewable energy generation, specifically on solar, that is tied into the state's climate goals.
We should mention that the three high school students here are all in a high school that just went completely solar. Mm-hmm. Does someone want to quickly, we see we have some more calls coming in, but I think that'd be a great time for someone to talk about that.
Yeah, so we have, on our high school, we now have more than 1,400 panels, and we produce year-round more than we use. We're also, through power purchase agreements with new legislation, we are saving $1.25 million over the next 25 years, and there was no upfront cost for the high school. So it sort of just goes to show that this is like, these are things that make sense in the long run as well. We're saving money by doing this, and we're also saving the planet.
Great. Anyone else want to interject, or should we take a call? We have a lot of calls, and thanks for all the calls, and I apologize to my guests for not being able to get in this as in-depth yet with the task force. Please go ahead, caller.
Amy, this Meredith, this
yes.
is Storm.
Hi, Storm.
And yes, I'm calling from Ireland, and the thing that I wanted to bring into everybody's attention is the most frequently and consistently overlooked theater of operations in this issue, and that is the defense and protection and restoration of ecosystems, wilderness, semi-wilderness, wetlands, forest, grasslands, coastal ecosystems, things like that. And that's all these Green New Deals and things that are coming out, all these plans that don't seem to consistently seem to overlook that aspect of it. This has tremendous economic implications as well of employing a lot of people and doing this kind of restoration and recovery work.
Mm-hmm. Great. Storm, thanks so much for calling in and for all the work that you do and calling in from Ireland.
You're very welcome.
Okay, we'll have some of our panelists comment on that. Laura, I saw that you might wanted to
absolutely.
Start off.
No, I think it's incredible. It's an incredibly important conversation to be having, because when we're talking about climate change and the climate emergency, what we are really talking about is the intersection of multiple crises, one of which, you know, ecological devastation. We have, every year it seems as though there's a report that comes out that talks about, a certain percentage of species are have now been lost because of overconsumption and resource use. And you know, living on Mount Desert Island, and I'm sure for the high school students as well, we are very aware of how climate change and, affects our home, which is, we have most of the island is covered by Acadia National Park. And even in the years that we've been here, it's possible to see those impacts. And so, ecological restoration has such an important role to play, both in sequestering carbon, because, you know, as you mentioned, wetlands and forests and everything have a massive part to play in drawing down carbon out of the atmosphere, which is actually what we need to do. We can't just, end carbon emissions. We actually have to be encouraging the carbon sequestration to actually restore a safe climate, not just sort of get to a certain point where it's bad, but we're willing to deal with it. And so it's absolutely part of the equation. I'm not sure. Maybe Adam, you want to talk about your experience, with your dad and everything, in terms of the economic impacts of that. Absolutely.
Oh yeah. So my father is a captain for the Bar Harbor Whale Watch. In recent years with warming ocean waters, certainly a lot of the whales' food has certainly left where it traditionally was, and they've had to go a lot closer and farther away. Towards Canada and whatnot, and that has lessened the amount of sort of you know, whale watching they can actually do in a day, and how many people can do it. And it really is sort of an issue. And I mean, living, you know, 5 minutes away from one of the nation's many national parks, it's certainly an issue, the ecological aspect of it, to all of us here, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else have a comment? We have another caller. I guess we'll take the other caller. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Jim Merkel from Belfast. I'm so inspired by the youth and what they're doing right now. I'm in my 60s, but I just want to urge parents and grandparents to get behind these youth and support them with their work, because we made the mess. And right now I'm working to fight these. There's like forced land-based aquaculture proposed, and I just finished doing a carbon analysis of the one in Belfast, and it's equal to adding like 120,000 cars to the road. And, you know, the first step is, you know, if we want to take action, we got to stop adding carbon if we want to get to carbon neutral. So that's why we're trying to stop this land-based salmon farm. That would be like adding five cities of Belfast to our area, massive amount of energy. And then they also want to liquidate an older forest. And as your last caller just said, you know, these old forests that store carbon under in the soil and in the canopy, you know, we just can't be keep cutting them down. And just the last point is that, you know, state of Maine just announced that they're meeting their 2020 target, but they're doing that by cooking the books, basically. They're saying biomass has zero carbon footprint, carbon neutral, and it's not. It's as dirty as coal. Mm-hmm. And then they're saying hydroelectric has zero carbon footprint, but there's lots of studies, scientific peer-based studies, that show it's about similar to natural gas because of all the methane comes off from once you flood the land. So I find it ironic, like Nordic is claiming they actually have lower carbon, and we have to have land-based salmon, but they plugged up all the rivers with these dams, which are adding carbon and methane and ruined all our salmon runs. And now they're saying they're going to give us factory fish that swim inside in circles all day long. And I have a 10-year-old boy, and I want him to be able to eat wild, catch wild salmon, not have salmon from a massive CAFO all over this coast of Maine. So that's what they're planning, is CAFOs. There's already four planned in Millinocket, in Jonesport, and in Bucksport, and now Belfast. And we got to send them running back to Norway because, you know, they're, you know, this is the next nail in the coffin of our fisheries. It's not carbon, but it's their fishery. But it's a huge carbon to circulate all the water. But anyway, that's what I just want to add, is that we got to stop these horrible projects.
Jim, are you aware of Belfast's efforts to declare a climate emergency?
Well, we have two climate actions signed by our city council. Not this climate emergency, but they did sign up to the Paris Accords. We are still in, and they also signed the governor's covenant. So they've already signed two agreements, but then they want to just add this like it's nothing. Like, we're going to add 120,000 cars like it's nothing. And so they're saying, well, it's not binding. Well, why'd you sign it? You know, if you don't think it's binding, why'd you sign these protocols? But I would like to talk to these youth about how we can get Belfast even sign a climate emergency. We should.
Great. Well, thanks for your call, Jim Merkel.
Yeah, thanks for all the good work you youth are doing. I love what you're doing.
Anyone want to comment on that, or go right ahead?
Yeah. So to the first point, I think one of the most important things is supporting youth, especially for adult allies. This is it at times facing such an large problem. It can feel very worrying and overwhelming, and you can feel alone. And having the support from your parents and your peers and your teachers is one of the most powerful things. And I think one of the reasons why MDI has been so successful with the climate movement is that we just have really good support. Our administration supports us. Our teachers support us. Our parents support us. So I think that's one of the most important things that adult allies can do.
Great. Other comments? Go right ahead.
I think also if you're looking for a way to support the youth, it's showing up and voting. It's a big deal. A lot of our youth are under 18, like myself. You know, we can't vote, especially like if you're not a resident of the town. So if you want to support, you know, always tell youth that you support them, and, you know, be active. If people are trying to put them down, you know, put yourself in front and stop them. But also show up and vote, because as nice as your support is, if you're just going to talk and you're not going to, you know, walk the walk, then it's pretty much useless. So if you can show up and you can vote on this issue, and you can vote, or you can talk and call your counselors and tell them that you want them to vote on this, to vote the climate emergency, then do that, because that's a great method of supporting.
Great. Did you want to add anything?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd just like to say that thank you for your support, but also Adult Allies and everyone in, who isn't a youth, they can get involved just as much as we can. It's not just us who should be pushing this. It can be everyone, and I think that's very important and very supportive for all of us. It's all our problems, not just the youth. It's everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just to sort of round that out, as someone who has been a youth climate organizer for over a decade, I think that, you know, seeing that this is something that we are continuing to have to talk about, and I think... you know, it is disheartening at times, because as someone sort of between a bridge between the youth and adults in the room, you know, I think that it is still incredibly frustrating, you know, to have, you know, climate pacts be signed and then not actually uphold them. And so one of the things that is so inspiring about working with youth now and is different for me, especially after 10 years of working in the climate and environmental space, is that, you know, these youth, these kids are they're building a movement. You know, this is something where we're passing climate emergency declarations, which, you know, sometimes do have binding pieces of them. You know, there's remits to change goals or, you know, integrate climate into strategic action planning, which are really important and incredible. But, you know, one of the things that is so important is about holding our politicians accountable, holding our elected officials accountable, and that requires consistent civic engagement on and what Sarohi was talking about getting out and voting. You know, we are living in a time where it is literally going to be life or death in terms of how we engage with our political system over the next few years. And so if you're interested in doing something on climate change, engage with the political system that we have, because it's the only one that we have, and it's the only thing that's going to save us if we want it to. So yeah, absolutely, vote, listen to your kids, listen to when they're saying that they're freaked out about climate change, because they are, and with good reason.
We are having a climate emergency call-in on WERU today. It is a call-in, so if you want to call with any questions or comments, 469-0500. We have with us in the studio four MDI high school students who are founding members of the Climate Emergency Action Coalition, along with Lara, who you just heard from, a recent COA graduate. They were behind the passage of a climate emergency declaration in Bar Harbor, one of four that has been passed throughout the state. And on January 21st, the Bar Harbor Town Council additionally passed a measure to create a climate emergency task force to come up with a plan to draw carbon down on Mount Desert Island. I believe we have a caller on the air. We'll get to you. Thanks for waiting. Again, 469-0500. Please give us your question or comment. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, this is Nick Jackson. Hi, Meredith.
Hey.
I wanted to call in. I appreciate all the work that the youth are doing. I wanted to just share some information about the Maine Regenerative Agriculture Facebook group. It's a place to talk about soil health and how soil health can be part of the solution.
Great.
And I also wanted to just put a plug in for Alan Savory and the Savory Institute, savory.global. He's been working on these issues for decades and decades before it was even considered a real problem. Alan Savory will point out that climate change isn't the problem. It's a symptom of the problem. And global desertification is the larger problem, that even if we stop burning fossil fuels today, because of the way we grow our food, both plants and animals, we are desertifying the grasslands around the globe. And if we stop, even if we stop burning fossil fuels today, we are going to continue seeing temperatures rise and out of whack weather.
Thank you for your great. Thanks for calling in and sharing that perspective and those resources. We appreciate it. I want to turn back with our in-house guests here and talk a little bit more about the work that you're doing at the Bar Harbor town level, because you passed, you were behind passing this declaration, but it's not only aspirational. You are having to do some heavy lifting and figure out how to achieve these goals, because it's serious, and that has been the message of the climate emergency. So if I could have whoever wants to go first, but to talk about after the passage of the climate emergency declaration in November, the town council made it really clear they didn't want it just to be aspirational either, that they wanted to pass something that would have teeth. And so immediately there were so-called stakeholder meetings, and then that turned into the creation of a resolution that was just adopted to make a task force. So Ken, I'd like to hear from all of you about your perspectives on this, but some about the process. Who was at that stakeholders meeting? Okay, Sarohi, please
so
start off.
There were two stakeholder meetings within the month following the emergency resolution declaration, and they were very productive. They had attendees who were like representatives of different businesses and, you know, just concerned citizens from around the island. And, you know, we got together and we talked about first action that has been taken by individual businesses, and then also what the next steps can be. And while it was very interesting to hear all the different things that people have done, it was also, while it was productive, it was a bit frustrating to hear. It sounded at the beginning like a lot of people saying that they wanted to do things but not actually committing any time or resources. But over the course of the two meetings, the decision that we came to was that we should draft the legislation for a task force to be formed. And we had support pledged through both funds and time. And, you know, people committed resources, which is way more important, I think, than just empty words. So the meetings were basically an opportunity for people to come together and show their support, but also, you know, forge next steps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think the point, Laura, really of the point of the task force itself or these stakeholder meetings was to bring together the different the different organizations, the institutions, the people on the island who are going to be affected by climate change, whether it's the operations at the Jackson Lab or Acadia National Park, who's already, you know, they're already very aware of climate change and its impacts on the park's operations, to College of the Atlantic, local businesses, as Sarohi mentioned. And because these are the people that are going to be impacted by climate change, but also who would be needing to take action and to just demonstrate leadership in terms of decreasing their own carbon emissions very rapidly, supporting publicly the efforts of the town in taking that leadership role. And so bringing the community together in a very open forum, you know, anyone was able to attend, so that they could talk about what they were doing, share their knowledge. Us at the college, we've of course been working on these issues for a long time. We have one of the most ambitious goals in the country for an educational institution, which is to be a fossil fuel free campus by 2030. And so getting everyone together in the room was a really helpful sort of exercise in understanding, okay, we have a lot of knowledge, but we don't necessarily have a lot of structure in the way that we need to go forward on this goal that we've set for ourselves, which is addressing the climate emergency somehow at the town level. And so what we ended up with was a resolution or a motion to create a task force with a couple of different goals, one of which is to, you know, basically create a plan to make suggestions, do research, to get the town, the community, not just the town operations, but the entire community to zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, which we've heard has been, you know, from some people that that's an incredibly ambitious and unrealistic goal. Because, you know, that means that nobody can use fossil fuels or, you know, who knows, you know, we all have to change our heating over. But the reality of the situation is that that is what we have to do. That actually is, unfortunately, what we have to do. But the good thing about the situation is that we have the capacity to do it. It's just about the leadership and the political will. And so, you know, we also got asked, you know, what can a tiny town like Bar Harbor do? When in reality, you know, the island gets over 3 million visitors a year. We are constantly in the media. We're a very, you know, a community that ostensibly has the capacity to take on climate change in a way, in a very public and visible way that other communities in Maine might not. And so, you know, for us, it's really about addressing our own contribution to climate change, but then also advocating, I think, for other organizations, other governments, you know, across Maine. Anna had mentioned that there are multiple governments across Maine that are considering climate emergency resolutions and really sort of setting the standard for that. So the task that, you know, the meetings themselves, we discussed this very openly and very clearly, and that was actually incredible to be part of, to hear, you know, these high school students coming to the adults in the room and saying, this is a problem and you need to fix it because our community is at risk and you are acting like it's not a problem. How can we go on like this? And so, you know, we really do need to sort of shift into emergency mode, essentially, you know, treat this like it was any other threat, immediate threat, because that's what it is.
Comments on the imperative of action now, despite what may seem difficult to do, the potential to get it done if people become serious?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, this is something we're all going to have to deal with in time. And so taking action now, while we still have a little bit of time, is certainly a lot better than taking it in 5-10 years, because things are going to become a lot more difficult to fix and prepare for than if we do all we can now. And that's, I mean, part of the reason why I think we all did what we're doing now is because we've seen it's going to be a problem, a lot bigger problem, a lot sooner than we think, and something needed to be done. Yeah.
Great. Thomas?
I think one of the biggest things that we got out of the stakeholders meetings and also presenting the resolution is that we're kids, we're the youth, and this shouldn't have to be our job. We're at school. We have things to do. We should be studying and playing. And although we'll be the leaders of tomorrow, right now we're not in charge. And we need the people who are in charge to really step up and act like adults and do what they need to do to protect our futures.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Any other comments or go to a call? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll take the next caller. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks. I guess that's me. I'm yes. David from Brooklyn. I really do salute your local initiative there, being able to deal with this problem on a very local basis. I think is pivotal to being able to solve it. And I just wonder, in that respect, what your orientation is towards on the grid. Power saving versus off-the-grid power saving, things such as a local battery charging bank similar to the old local watering hole, the local well where the community used to be able to gather to replenish its depleted resources, rather than having to trust the statewide or larger grid system to take us into consideration in our little bailiwicks.
So more about decentralization, David. Is that kind of what you're driving
to? Yes, I'm talking about radical decentralization.
Excellent. Thank you for your call. We have another call that John's going to bring in. But does anyone want to talk about the concept of decentralized energy? We're talking about radical drawdown. We're talking about local action versus waiting for national action. Can you talk about the role? I mean, again, the high school chose to put solar panels on your roofs. You didn't wait for someone to come and build a big wind farm.
Yeah, and a lot of things with this is that, like, I love talking about solutions all day and looking at all of these sorts of things, but at the end of the day, it's really policy that needs to change, and we know we have the solutions, and that's the point of the task force, is that they're the people who are going to investigate these discussions. And really see what the best options are to make these things happen. So, those sorts of conversations are why we have created the task force. And those are also groups like A Climate to Thrive. They're people who are looking at these solutions and looking at how to apply them, especially like with the high school. I mean, that was a Climate to Thrive project it would have been able to be done without A Climate to Thrive, but they were a huge role in that and why we were able to get that power purchase agreement and have it done all so quickly.
Yep. Anyone else want to talk to about the potential of local action as to expedite this process?
I'm no expert on national and international governments, but the COP25 conference that happened, we had several COA students go and attend.
That's the UN climate talks, yep.
Yeah, so it was widely regarded as not a success. It seems that, you know, as slow as national government is, it seems that international government seems to go even slower. So oftentimes the only thing that can really act at the speed we need it to is local government and local action, be it, you know, three or four members of a Climate to Thrive coming to change one high school solar, you know, power source. So oftentimes local action and local governments move way faster than national or international government. So that seems to be the only solution.
Great. Thomas, again.
And also another point to that is that we're leading the way and showing that it's possible to change. And if one town changes, then other towns see that, oh, we can do that too. That wasn't so bad. And so it's like this effect that everyone is starting to do these things because they're seeing that we have the ability to change and that it's really not a big deal. And in fact, it's saving us money.
Yeah. Laura.
And I think, you know, the success of the local climate emergency movement, which actually has now over 1,300 municipalities worldwide, most of them local governments have passed these declarations that have started taking the sort of emergency speed action that we really need. You know, as Thomas and Sorrow, he said, we're paving the way for what we know what we need, which is truly a global mobilization on climate. You know, on climate change and on ecological devastation, because what we are facing is something that we can do, you know, probably 50% to 70% of the work at the local level. It's possible. It's possible to change high schools and to change our own businesses, to stop using single-use plastics. But these are symptoms of much bigger societal, global economic issues of overconsumption and resource use and exploitation and fossil fuel interests. And, you know, these are huge, huge issues that we know will need to be addressed at the national and international level. But in the lack of that at the moment, that leadership, honestly, from the national level in the United States on environmental issues to the inability of the UN to actually get anywhere. You know, the UN climate talks have been going on since as long as I've been alive. And we are no closer to addressing climate change than we were in 1994, truly. And so, you know, I think that to a certain extent, it's both, you know, taking action, but also building the power that we need to demonstrate that global democratic mandate for actually true systematic change at the national and global level, because that is what we need. And we recognize that, you know, we know that we're not we are an island, but we're not an island. You know, we are connected to a global economy and to a society that is in serious danger right now. And we want to lead the way, but we also know that we have to do this on a massive scale. It can't just be local.
Great. Any other comments? Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah. So we've seen a myriad of times in all of our history that in the United States that change comes from the bottom up. And I think that's not going to be any different here. If people up at the top aren't going to take action, then small towns like us, we need to take the first steps. Then perhaps if we get more and more of us, then it'll be a state, then a national, and then the international governments that do something too. And I think that's really what we're shooting for.
Great, thank you. And we just have a few minutes left, and I'm going to take some calls, or John's going to repeat a question.
Actually, I just want to jump in here because MDI is in a county. It's called Hancock. And I made a little bit of a call yesterday to find out, has anything been done at the county level? And the county people said no one has made any questions or inserts or approaches about the climate emergency. So the question that I have for you folks is, can the MDI action group take a question to the county level? And would that do any good in your minds?
Absolutely. So I actually had the pleasure of speaking with a Hancock County commissioner at one of the stakeholder meetings and had a good discussion about the climate emergency movement as a whole. There have been a number of counties, actually, some in California, a couple, one in Maryland, a few all over the United States that have also taken that step in passing a climate emergency declaration. Because you're absolutely right. It is a a regional thing. It's a national thing. It's a local thing. You know, all governments at all scales need to be acting as if this is an emergency. They need to change their operations, change their governing priorities to deal with climate change as the number one thing that we are dealing with. And so, you know, our next step as a coalition after, you know, a long fight to get everything finished and about a week's break so that the students could finish their final exams, we have big plans for the next couple of months in terms of, you know, forming the task force locally to make sure that we have that, you know, sort of set before students go off and for the summer, and to make sure that this is going to be a long-term process at the local level, but then also reaching out to other towns on the island, groups like the League of Towns, you know, local, other nearby towns. We were working with, you know, Anna Siegel, who was on the phone earlier with us, to make this really a statewide thing. And then, of course, you know, going to Hancock County and asking them to recognize this is not simply a local issue, but that all of Hancock County is going to be affected by climate change, and we have a responsibility to address it, even if, you know, we think that we can't or we think we're not part of the problem. We all are, and we're all going to be affected.
We have one more caller on the phone that we just can have a very quick comment or question because we just have 5 minutes left of the program. Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Gary Fidman in Bar Harbor, and I just want to say that as a town councilor, when I'm sitting
So we should say you are a Bar Harbor Town Council member. You're part
right.
of this, yes.
Right. So when we're sitting across the table from the students, I just can't tell you how powerful it is to have young people who are articulate and passionate about an issue like this to be you know, presenting their requests. I think that they're not only you know, a symbol of our future, but they're making a big difference. But one of the questions that I get is, you know, a lot of you are seniors, or, you know, students are only around for a short period of time. What's your plan for keeping this going, you know, keeping the pressure on and keeping the momentum going, you know, in Bar Harbor on MDI?
So one of the big things, for me at least, is to educate others, and sort of that's something that I've seen over the past 2 years of doing climate work, is that when you educate other people, they become aware, and then this spreads, and that's how this has become such a big thing. And that's the way that A Climate to Thrive started, and that's the way that the MDIHS Eco Team started, is just a couple of people talking to each other and saying, hey, like, we need to solve these problems. Let's go talk to somebody else about it. And so that's sort of another one of those things that just keeps spreading. And so hopefully, and I just from over the past 2 years leading the Eco Team, I've seen younger students start to realize that this is a problem that's going to affect them and join on. And so, yeah, that's something that I'm definitely not worried about. With the amount of support that we have and the amount of people who are coming to realize that this really is a problem that affects them.
We have how many minutes left? 2 more minutes. You want to have a quick last word, and we want to give out some resources too, and thank you so much.
Also, for the, so there's the, we have the Eco Team to keep our movement in Bar Harbor going, and we have, you know, staff at COA and staff at the high school. But also, when we leave, it's not like we leave our experiences behind. I know when these two seniors go off to college, and when I go off to college, and, you know, if a teacher moves somewhere else, they're going to take this movement with them. So everywhere we go, we're not going to stop our climate action here. We're going to just bring it everywhere we go. So it's not ever going to stop.
Laura, you're not going anywhere.
Not anytime soon.
Tell us where people can go for more information. This is obviously, you all are not going anywhere right now, and the important hard work that you've just set up to do is going to be happening and folding in these next weeks and months, again, to make this task force a reality. Where can people go to find out more information if they want to replicate efforts to create a climate emergency in their own community, or get in touch with you all?
Absolutely. So if you'd like to keep in touch with us in Bar Harbor with the Climate Emergency Action Coalition, you can follow us on Facebook. Just search Climate Emergency Action Coalition. If you'd like more information and also resources for activists, for organizers who are interested in starting a climate emergency campaign in your backyard, you can visit climatemobilization.org. And there's a link to sign up to receive an organizer toolkit with resources and trainings and everything that you need to get started on a climate emergency campaign. And you can also visit climateemergency.us, which links actually to the national effort to declare a climate emergency at all levels of government. There's a petition. You can sign up for more information. But please do get in touch with us through Facebook if you'd like to be included in updates on what's happening in Bar Harbor and across Maine.
Great. We would like to thank Sarohi Kumar, about mispronouncing everyone's names, Adam Nusline, Thomas Kristanji, and Laura Berry. We had Anna Siegel on the phone and Anya Wright on the phone. The time went by too quickly. We will be talking with you again on future Radioactives to continue following this work. And thank you all for joining us today.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
Yang is my